Welcome back to the Drug Report Hotline, the official hotline of GERWEC.net. That's www.GERWECK. At this time, it is my pleasure and my honor to bring on the hotline the one, the only, the living legend himself, Larry Zbysko.
That's a pretty good introduction there, Steve.
Well, it's my pleasure, and thank you for coming on the hotline today.
Well, it's okay. I'll think of some way to get even with you.
Well, Larry, let's just
start
from the beginning now. How did you get started in the wrestling business?
You know, let me take this opportunity to plug what the heck I'm doing right now, but like every other wrestler under the sun, I decided to write a book.
I kind of
start the book with how I got in wrestling, so I'll give you a preview.
Okay.
It was pretty strange, as my whole career was. But, you know, in this business, it's weird. If you don't kiss butt, it makes for a very unique business in this profession, but I always seem to bump heads with the wrong people over the right stuff. But, you know, the beginning of my career was weird because in those days, what was it, 1967, 68, I just became like 16 years old. I got my driver's permit or license, whatever it was. So the first thing I did was drive around Bruno's house like a stalker. And, you know, he was my big hero, so I found out where he lived, and not too far from me, a few miles down the road, in the North Hills of Pittsburgh there. So I started driving around his house, and one day there he was, sitting in the backyard. And so, I stopped the car, and I, like, stuck around in his backyard, and I made my way through these big, giant hedges he had, like, you could barely see him back there. Well, I busted through his hedges. He was sitting on the grass playing with David, who must have been a little kid. I mean, he was like 3 or 4 years old at the time. And he saw me coming through the hedges, and he gets up, and because I was like 16, I must have weighed, I think, maybe 150 pounds, which is, you know, a little skinny, you know, kind of kid. And he got up, and man, I almost say he looked like a gorilla. I mean, Bruno in his prime was indescribably impressive, you know, as a powerful looking guy. But he was very good. I introduced myself and told him what I was doing and what a big fan I was and how bad I wanted to be a wrestler, blah, blah, blah. He was impressed with my amateur wrestling career, and to make a long story short, he took me under his wing. And when I got a little older, like 17, 18, I started working out with him in his basement, did the same, like, weightlifting routine Bruno did, which, kind of why I resembled him so much, because we did the same workout, a lot of chest, heavy benches and arms and upper body stuff. And, it was a kind of unique, Steve, because at that time, in the mid-late 60s, it wasn't like it was today with his wrestling schools, you know, everywhere, and people watching him, giving their money so you can, you know, think you're a wrestler and all that. In those days, they didn't want you in the business. You know, when you came around to the arena or a wrestling promotion and wanted to be a wrestler, they'd throw you in the ring with some guy like Carl Gotch or Billy Robinson or somebody, and the guy would just unmercifully beat you to a pulp or break your arm or pop your knee or... send you home so you could tell your friends, oh my God, you don't want to mess with those guys, they'll kill you. It was good for the business, but they didn't want in the business, they didn't want strangers in. It was a very closed shop, so for Bruno to take me under his wing was very unique at the time, so I guess it had to do with me fulfilling my destiny, and it just had to be that way.
Let me ask you about the book. Are you done writing it, and when will it be published, and it will be published?
No, I'm not done writing it. I got this book this summer, and between golf and the schedule, I've been going up to this secluded cabin up in the mountains north of Atlanta, you know, for a week here and a week there, and wrote some stuff. I got about 6 chapters done, but I haven't been writing it longhand, because I can't type. And I don't do computers, you know, it would take me a year to type out with one finger. But, so I got a friend of mine typing it up, and then I got a couple publishers. Other ones in the Heenan book, and some other guys, and other ones. So I got a couple publishers that said, you know, type it up and send it to us, and then we'll see if we can speed it along with, I can hire me a young, gorgeous, beautiful person, you professional typist.
I'll see what I can do with it.
Larry Zbysko, actually was kind of synonymous with my given Polack name when I was born, but Bruno was the one that refined it to Zbysko because of the famous Polish wrestlers Stanislaw Zbysko and Władysław Zbysko of the early 1900s. And when I started the ethnic thinking of drawing money was still in big existence. You know, Bruno would go to New York and draw all the Italian people, and Kosher Zdowski would be in Milwaukee and draw all the Polish people. And then Bobo Brazil for the black people, and Pedro Morales for the Puerto Ricans and Spanish people. So they use a lot of ethnic, so I was Polish anyway, and Zbysko, actually, when I was a kid, my grandparents, who were off the boat and spoke Polish fluently, used to call me a Zbysko, which was, had something to do with the translation of like the big one, or the tough one, or the stocky one, or something like that. It had to do like Stanislaw Zbysko, where Zbysko was not his real name. It probably meant like Stanley the Great One, or Stanley the Tough One, or something like that. So, Bruno was actually the one that dubbed me Sir Lawrence Zbysko.
Interesting. How did you get started with the WWWF?
How did I get in there?
Yeah, how did you get started with Vince Senior?
Well, that was Bruno. I mean, Bruno took me under his wing and trained me in his basement. And then I used to go off to some other areas of Pittsburgh at that time and ring work. I don't even do too much ring work. We were over a lot of holds and submission wrestling with some guys. I was pretty much a natural. I did a lot of about 9 years of amateur wrestling before I even got into the pros. So I had a real good background with wrestling, with movement and balance. And I already had a black belt in Ishiru karate at that time. And I was gung ho back then when I was young and dumb. Then one of the guys who were around that area for a while was named Dito Mongol. Luke McCaffrey from Canada wrestled with Dito Mongol, and he had a ring set up in his barn. This is a real quickie. Me and Bill Eady, who wrestled as like the Mass Superstar and Smash or Axe or something.
Demolition,
yeah. Me and Bill used to go down to the Dito's barn in his ring and work out with each other before we basically started in a pro. At the same time, we both basically kind of started in the smaller little high school markets there. And after we both started, after working out together in Dito's gym, we haven't seen each other for 30 years almost. I think I saw Bill for the first time like a year and a half ago. That's how weird our careers were. I was always in one spot, and he was always in another. WWF, Bruno brought me in, and Bruno basically ran the territory. I mean, he ran everything. He did all the main events, all the programming, and who was coming into New York and who wasn't. And when he told the McMahons, hey, I got this kid, he's very good, I'm gonna push him as my protege. All the McMahons couldn't wait to roll out the red carpet because Bruno said so.
Right.
So it was politics, I guess. I didn't know it at the time. I was just, young and dumb and gung ho and respectful, and blew me in and off. He's a great guy.
And how did you start with Vern Gagne in the AWA?
Well, the days of the AWA were actually the last days of the territories. After Bruno and I did our Shea Stadium feud, that famous feud from 1980, the business was basically changing in New York. It was basically like the end of the old school up there. McMahon Jr. was bringing in after his dad died. He got into all the giant steroided up guys, and then the whole business was full of guys that had 30-inch arms and little waist and looked surrealistic, but they couldn't do anything. So hence they invented the clothesline. They all stood there and ran each other's arms. But as being a wrestler, I was more of a wrestler's wrestler. And ways more of the old school ways to work. And a guy like Vern Gagne, who was an old wrestler, still liked that style. So then it was time, the WWF or the high in the working ethics because they went one direction, but you know, I was a different product. So I found a home in the AWA, which was run by an old school wrestler who liked that style. You know, even the Crockett's in the NWA held on to that style longer.
Right. Okay, Larry, hold on 1 second. We're over to option number one.
Okay.
Okay, option number one, reserve report. We continue on with the living legend and tough words of Bisco. And Larry, I wanted to ask you this because you were, of course, I think you still are married to Vern Gagne's daughter. And it's kind of a parallel today between you and Triple H, who, of course, is married to Vince McMahon Jr.'s daughter, Stephanie. Do you feel that you got kind of special treatment because you were Vern's son-in-law? Kind of like Triple H is getting special treatment being Vince Jr.'s son-in-law.
Well, I never got any special treatment. In the AWA days, I was in there after for a couple years, and then I left for like 6 months, and came back and got a good push with the Gagne's. I always got along good with Vern. Like I said, he liked the wrestling style. And Greg Gagne was a nice guy, and I knew Kathy for, you know, 3 or 4 years while I was working there before anything ever happened, and I really didn't get any special treatment. I was 35, 36 years old, already established with the name, so it wasn't like I was some young guy who used to be someone else and all of a sudden got a break, you know, so I really never had any special treatment. In fact, it was funny because me and Kathy first started going out, we really kept it a big secret. I didn't want anybody to know, and she didn't either. I didn't want special treatment. I didn't want all the goofy idiots to say, oh my God, he's going out with the boss's daughter. He wants to get a belt. You know, all that stupid nonsense. We really went out of our way to keep it a secret for, I think it was over a year or so, which is tough in the wrestling business.
Right.
It was fun, all those sneaky rendezvous, you know. It was fun at the time. So, quick to the 17 years of marriage, it's still fun. So, beautiful deaf mutes, where are you? But, one day, me and Kathy went to a Moody Blues concert, like downtown St. Paul or some big building, right? And with all those thousands and thousands of people, here we are at this Moody Blues concert. During the intermission, the lights went on for a second, and I turned around, and who the hell is sitting right behind us is Greg. Greg and some people, you know. And they saw us, and we saw them, and then the whole news got out. So then after that, it's like, I'm supposed to, so now after having all these, you know, booking meetings and things at Vern's house, now after all these years, all of a sudden this news gets out, so now I'm officially called by the family. Kathy says now they want me to come over with her, like reporting or something. It was very weird, so now, you know, me and Vern always had a good relationship. Now when I come over to the house with his daughter, I walk in, the first thing I see is, hi, Dad! And I didn't get over, you know, he hated me for about a year. I'd have to wear like a hat and sunglasses and a coat like it's a disguise. So nobody on the lake would recognize me that I was with his daughter. It was a classic romance, but it was an interesting thing with, at least actually after me and Kathy got married not too long, at least I took off and left the AWA, which closed the doors anyway, went to WCW. Bad thing about Paul, well, Triple H, he's got nowhere to go. He's gonna have to stay there with Vince. I don't know Stephanie, but from what everybody tells me, Stephanie's a nice kid. So I hope they live happily ever after like me and Kathy did. And God bless him, and just if we can just talk and avoid Jr., he'll probably be okay.
Can you kind of sympathize with Triple H, you know, how he's perceived in the locker room? Because, you know, all the other boys look at him as, you know, he's the boss's son, and you kind of had the same thing when you were in the AWA.
Well, kind of, but correct me if I'm wrong, but Triple H was already with the champion and already a top guy before they got married.
Oh, sure. Yes, he was.
So, you know, it's not like Stephanie met some guy at Tough Enough and all of a sudden he became a star. You know, Paul worked hard for years and paid his dues and did his things. But, in terms of the boys, whether you're married to someone's daughter or you're just a top guy, you've had enough jealousy to last your career anyway. There's always been jealousy, there's always been resentment, there's always been talk. Well, he's a top guy, even if you're married to the guy's daughter, then you're kissing his butt, or you're doing, or you're a stooge, or they've always got some excuse. And now, the thing that makes this happen is because there's a ridiculous amount of money between an everyday guy and a top guy. So it invokes a lot of jealousy, you know, throughout the week sometimes. But personally, Paul's a hardworking guy. Looks good. As a fellow peer and someone who married a promoter's daughter, I certainly, wouldn't make any comments. I think he did his own thing without Stephanie's help.
What caused the ultimate demise of AWA?
Well, probably a couple simple basic things. It's just like the mom and pop grocery store, went out of business against the giant conglomerates, like Pathmark and Publix and all that stuff over the years. The territories went the same way because of national television and national pay-per-view and this and that. Sell products just, you know, trying to hustle up whatever out of the office behind the scene, and Larry was doing the interviews. So one day we come into the AWA TV thing there to do some interviews. We're all waiting around, and we're waiting. Larry Nelson never shows up. And we find out later that he just disappeared from Minneapolis. So Eric stepped in and started doing the interviews, and that's how we wound up doing it. But Larry Nelson, what happened was he had three DUIs, because he liked to drink and drive. And he didn't do them well together. So he kept getting caught. So he got caught with another DUI and was going to go to jail for a while. So what he did was he left his car, he left his apartment, he left his clothes, he took a suitcase, and he disappeared off the face of the earth.
I remember that.
He had just gone. No one knew where he was for a while. I guess probably he cooled off or whatever. And the last I heard of Larry Nelson was still maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. He was a disc jockey somewhere in the Florida Keys, Key West or something. He was a disc jockey for an oldie station under a different name. I guess he wrote a little book or something a while ago.
Kind of the mentor for AJ Styles, but that didn't last very long. Was that by design?
Vince Russo.
Oh, okay. I really had to point the finger at one guy. It's just, the way they were going through things, they really didn't have a whole lot of direction, you know, when they first started. And originally, they wanted me to come in and kind of, I don't know if they would say take AJ under my wing or be a manager or a protege, like a Bruno me thing or something. And it started off good. And AJ's a good kid. We had a couple of good matches and we're going to lead to some other things. But then something happened. I'm surprised if I remember. I think what happened was at that time they had one money backer that didn't want to be known and people found out, so he pulled out. And for two or three months, they were almost going to shut the doors. And then this deal with the energy people worked out. So the programs that started just kind of came to an abrupt halt and went in some different directions. Plus, they were doing their shows on Wednesday. And on Wednesday, usually I've been playing in the professional mini tour and professional golf tournaments during the week. They're usually like Wednesday, Thursdays, and Fridays. So I didn't want to go up on Wednesdays because I was busy doing some other things. So it kind of started off and then it kind of fizzled out, which wasn't really due to anybody. It was just kind of a set of circumstances. And now that they're doing it on Tuesday, it's perfect for me because it's right down the street. There's a professional golf during the week. And then on Saturday, I fly out and do an appearance here and there. So life's pretty good, Steve.
Good. I wanted to ask you, you live in Florida there, did you survive all the hurricanes?
No. I survived it, but it was stupid. I couldn't wait 2 months. I moved out a couple months ago, right in time, with a stupid hurricane. And three of them come, you know, they didn't come over here, but right next to you, like three times in a row. Nothing happened here. A lot of debris, a dent in my car, and the power went out a couple days. But nothing like they got. Actually, I think the worst one was the one that came up in Pensacola. That Hurricane Ivan really nailed those people. I think it wiped out all the arms. It was a curse of the Armstrongs.
Is that what it was?
That's what it was. The Armstrongs, all of them in Pensacola, and the curse of the Armstrongs took Ivan right up there.
These guys who meet your office, every time they do interviews, the music boys say, what's the cause of all these hurricanes? And you got the answer.
Curse of the Armstrongs.
There you go.
I used to talk about that in WCW a bunch. Because the Armstrongs were so good, but they never won.
So
they were cursed. They cracked me up one time on the WWF show. The Road Dog came out and was wearing a shirt that said, look, Mom, no curse.
Larry, how did you start with WCW?
What?
How did you get started with WCW?
Well, I got a call one day. It was, 1989 or 1999, whenever they were first starting up. But I'll tell you an interesting story about that now that you asked. I was in the AWA. The AWA was getting close to closing the doors. You know, Glenn was going nuts and didn't really know how to compete with the new world system of wrestling here. It was getting older and tired of blowing money, so that was getting ready to close, but the Ganyas came up with a hell of an idea. They were pretty, you know, good with the promoting and coming up with ideas and characters and stuff. And their idea was an invasion angle against WCW, which was just starting. The Turner just took it over. I think they were talking to some guy named Jim Hurd. And in the middle of this, you know, sucking all this up and listening to it, is Eric Bischoff. Because he's working in the office. They're taking Larry Nelson's spot and trying to sell Weber Ninja stuff or something. So they had this idea for an invasion angle where the AWA guys are trying to, if they keep their doors open, would invade the WCW guys. Which was a hell of an idea that, of course, later, Bischoff, you know, brought in as the New World Order. It was a Ganya idea. And they wanted me to come in with the AWA belt and wrestle Sting, who just got the WCW belt, and some other guys, and it would have been a heck of an idea. It would have been a very good idea for the time. And I hate to say this because the guy just died. He was a character, Jim Barnett. But Jim Barnett, who was one of the consultants for the new WCW thing, still had some old promoter mentality. And he told the WCW guys, he says, well, you know, my boys, he said, if Zbyszko comes down and wrestles Sting, he can eat Sting up if he
champion somewhere for a special deal. There was all this politics over who's champion. They're all afraid their champion will look better, even though they weren't the territory then.
Sure. But that's the way the thinking was. So Barnett kind of kept this from happening. Unfortunately, it would have been really good. And then that, the invasion angle never happened with that. But then when AWA was closing its doors, I got a call from Jim Hurd one day that said, Larry, we'd love to have you in WCW. So I said, well, what are we talking about? And he mentioned money, and they paid for the move, and it was a first-class treatment, and it was a great relationship ever since. Turner was a hell of a company. I loved the Turner Company. And Turner Time Warner was great. AOL is the biggest bunch of stupid idiots you'll ever see in your life.
You know, there's a rumor that Ted Turner may get back into professional wrestling.
Well, I've heard that rumor a lot, and said now that their no-compete clause is ready to expire, I guess, the first of the year or something.
But the rumor's getting bigger by the day, now that it's getting closer to the first of the year, but
I have no idea if it's legitimate. I know Turner, who I've met a couple times, is a heck of a guy as far as I'm concerned, but he's one of the biggest wrestling fans in the world. He loves wrestling. Not just because it should be a fun thing to watch, but it's also good business. Whenever wrestling's on, you're going to get a high rating. So, he's a big wrestling fan, but he knows his programming, AOL is just a bunch of computer geeks who rip their brain.
Right. Okay, hold on, I'll take Larry to work option number three. All right, our final 10 minutes with Larry Zbysko, and...
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we're almost done, Larry. Hold on.
All right, 10 more minutes. We could be iron lung.
This is the segment I like to kind of do name association. I'll throw out a name.
Oh, are you doing these goofy things like all these... Everybody that does the same thing. That's like, they'll spit a name out, try to trip me up, huh?
Well, I'm a very curveball to you, I'm a straightforward kind of person, so...
Well, I like to play this, so whatever I say, pay it no mind, it's just a game.
Okay, how about Eric Bischoff?
Eric Bischoff is a tremendous one-man sales force. He can sell people on anything.
How about Vern Gagne?
Well, Vern was, he was one of the old-school classic, promoters, but he was also one of the old-school classic tough guys. The breed of men like Vern Gagne was, and Mad Dog was Sean, and Lou Fez, and Bruno, and some other guys, they were men, man. I mean, compared to this generation of bodybuilders who worry more about their biceps than ability,
nothing. They're a bunch of wimps compared to the last generation of tough guys, believe me.
How about Vince McMahon Sr.?
Vince McMahon Sr., he was a classic old-school promoter. He was very smooth, classy-looking guy. He was kind of, he'd walk in with the big, cashmere coat. He had an idiosyncrasy, Vince. He always had like four or five quarters in his hand, and he'd be jingling these quarters like an old-time, promoter guy you see in an old black-and-white movie. He was a decent guy. He just seemed smooth. Promoters are promoters. They'll lie, cheat, they can cry at will, they can, do whatever, but Vince was a very smooth character.
How about his son, Vince McMahon Jr.?
Vince isn't very smooth. He's a gutsy guy. Vince has a lot of guts. He's a very creative guy. You basically got to give Junior the credit for having a vision years ago and taking wrestling days of the territory into a new era of nationwide and worldwide business. Unfortunately, I think he doesn't know what he's doing now. He's throwing athletes out for a pair of silicone boots.
How about Arn Anderson?
Arn was what we would call one of the true workhorses. He was a wrestling machine. He was one of the guys that you could build a territory on. Arn. In fact, he probably could have been even a bigger star than he was, but he just liked where he was. He enjoyed it. He was comfortable. He liked doing the tag teams. He liked being one of the four horsemen. He's a big
you know, Flynn sidekick kind of guy, but he always enjoyed that. Arne was, you know, a great worker and had fun, and for some reason, I don't know if he ever wanted to really be a super duper star, but I think he could have.
How about Ric Flair?
Ric Flair, the nature boy, he is in his own world, brother.
He's
always been in his own world, and he's, you know, he's one of the clan, you know, he survived the test of time, and I have a hard time seeing why sometimes, because he does the same thing over and over and over. But you gotta give him credit, the guy's still 56 years old, still going.
How about Scott Hall?
Scott Hall. Now, here's a guy who, he's got, I don't think Scott realizes how much charisma he's got. I mean, he's a great talent, and I think he just has a hard time keeping a level head sometimes. And some guys, love the business, they get into it. I got into the business because I love it. Other people got into the business because they wanted to be one, but then when they wind up becoming a big star, I don't think they can handle it, or they never thought it would happen, and so some guys are just aren't ready for it. So I think Scott's a great talent. I think if he keeps his head straight, he could be a real asset.
How about his AWA tag team partner, Kurt Hennig?
Oh, Kurt was great. Kurt was a hell of a worker. He was a heck of an athlete. He was a fun guy to be around. When I heard Kurt died, it really hit me hard. You know, that and Hawk and Ruin, some of the other guys. And half the guys I won't say helped start it out, but I was a little influence in their careers because they started after me. And Kurt even stole some of my stuff, rearranged it a bit, but I was always honored with that. But they were great talent. They was a great talent. That was a sad thing.
How about Dusty Rhodes?
Dusty's a classic, brother. Dusty's a very creative guy. And he's kind of like one of the true professional wrestling characters who has become a character that could never grow up. I mean, he's like me. We'll never grow up. We'll always be that character because we love the business so much. And Dusty, was running a lot of companies. Kind of amazed me because he never seemed to run out of ideas. You know, he was a very creative guy.
How about Vince Russo?
Well, Vince Russo is another kind of a new school creative guy. The only thing about Russo was when he first, and believe me, I don't know why the wrestling business even considered hiring a writer. To me, writers have no place in professional wrestling. Go write a show. Go write a book. You know, write a cartoon. And, it doesn't matter how creative you are, if you don't know the psychology of the wrestling business, you're not going to do it any good. So, Russo is a hard-working guy and a creative guy, but he really didn't know what he was doing.
How about Larry Zbysko?
Greatest wrestler of all time, most charismatic talker the business ever knew, and a man who still drives women crazy by merely walking into a room with that Sean Connery kind of charm.
And the most modest, of course.
Well, someone's got to tell me this stuff, so it might as well be me, because no one else does.
Larry, on your upcoming schedule, where are you going to be?
Where am I going to be? Well, flying out. When does this air, this hotline?
Right now. It's on the air right now.
Oh, we're on the air now.
Yep.
Thanks for telling me. Going to be going to North Carolina, like Greenville, North Carolina, somewhere tomorrow, and I'm going to be doing a show in somewhere around Orlando the 60th. October 23rd is an interesting date. That's a Saturday, and there's a big fan fest, Meet the Legends show in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I'm going to be there along with a bunch of other guys, and that's going to be a biggie. The guy already sold a bunch of tickets. He got a bunch of names and a show that. And that's going to be a good one. I like doing a nostalgic thing. And then at the end of the month, I'm doing another show in Jessup, Georgia. Every Saturday, I'm more busy now than when I had a job. And then, of course, every Tuesday, I'm going to be at Orlando at Universal with the TNA. And then Sundance Fest in Orlando, preceding the pay-per-view on the 7th, so.
Right.
So that'll be fun. You hear this song?
Yeah.
You hear the Three Stooges?
Yeah, okay.
Well, that's somebody calling me on my cell phone.
Oh, boy.
I got the Three Stooges on my cell phone if anybody needs a trivia question.
Oh,
got it.
Larry, do you have any professional regrets?
Professional regrets? Let me see. Not too many. I've been pretty happy with the career. I'm a perfectionist, so I don't really like 99% of the things I do. The only one regret that I have now with hindsight, because that's 2020, of course, I really wish I would have been more, boisterous is the word, or more pushy about getting myself involved with the office politics of WCW at one particular point in time, thinking, of course, that I might have been able to save the damn company from crumbling. And I guess I might have been a little too nonchalant. I was a little too into golf, and I wasn't that hungry anymore. And I was really happy with the broadcasting. And but it got frustrating, because even when you give some of the ideas to these people, they kept saying, oh, no, that's okay. Here, have a raise. Go home. And so, like, even though you tried to help, it was hard, because they didn't want it, or they didn't think they needed it. And, but I really wish I would have made a bigger stand or a bigger stake and tried to do more with that company behind the scenes, because they really could have used the help.
Okay, thank you. Larry, we're running very quickly out of time. I want to thank you for coming on the hotline. It's been a pleasure having you here. Like I said, I've always been a big fan of Larry Zbysko, and I grew up watching the AWA, and that makes you sound old or anything.
Well, no, I'm not old. I look good. Of course, now that I'm 52 and playing the senior tour, I'm happy. But you know what? To everybody out there that's 40 or 50, don't worry about it. It don't matter.